Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Power of Love radio show, sponsored by the Dee Dee Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love and that nothing is impossible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson.
I'm Carol Jackson.
I'm Tosh Jackson.
And I'm Henry Hebert. And today we are live on the Power of Love radio show. So if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. Later on in our show, we will open it up to take a few questions via Twitter. So if you have a question about our topic, which is loss and grief, and you want to ask, then send us a tweet at DDJ Foundation.
Nice. Okay, so Henry is a friend of ours. We met Henry about a year ago. Right? It's been about a year.
About a year.
Okay. When we were doing our television show, Jackson's Next Generation, on Lifetime, Henry was the executive producer and the showrunner for the show. So, Henry, your take on meeting us and what is your relationship?
What was that like?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, what was it like?
Well, meeting all of you was definitely a life-changing experience for me. I've worked on many, many, many reality shows, and in my personal time, I'd been doing a lot of nonprofit work, but this was the first time that I really was able to put together both. And for those of you who don't know, we co-founded the Dee Dee Jackson Foundation while filming the docuseries for Lifetime, The Jackson's Next Generation. Taj, Terrell, and TJ were born into the famous Jackson family. Their brothers inherited their talent from their dad, Tito, but it was their mom, Dee Dee, who really instilled in them the discipline to hone their craft. She was their best friend, their hero, a role model who tirelessly donated her time and resources to a number of charitable causes. And Taj, Terrell, and TJ, also known as the music group 3T, have toured and sold more than 3 million records worldwide just off their debut album. And in August of 1994, when they were busy working on their debut album in the studio, their mom, Dee Dee, she was tragically murdered. And this sudden loss really left the brothers heartbroken, shaken, and personally traumatized. And at the time, they were teenagers and young adults, and their world really was turned upside down. So fast forward 20 years later, while filming the TV show about their lives, the brothers really were ready to come to terms with their mom's passing. So every week we filmed, I'd speak to each of the brothers about what was happening in their lives so we could organically follow what was happening. And one week, Taj shared with me what was in his heart to do. So, Taj, can you talk about the phone call we had?
I sure can.
Thanks, Taj.
It was a phone call, and I basically was talking to Henry, and I said that for over 20 years that me and my brothers, we wanted to do something in honor of our mom and start a nonprofit. And I said that basically that will never happen on TV because it's too positive. Mm-hmm. And Henry's like, no, we're going to do it. And we did it. And it was, it's one of the biggest things in my life that I'm very proud of, but because it's a tribute to our mom and it honors her. And because she had such a everlasting imprint in other people's lives, not only ours. So I'm proud to have launched the Dee Dee Jackson Foundation with all of us.
Beautiful.
Definitely.
Thank you.
So Tara, why is the foundation really focusing on grief and loss?
Well, our mother was obviously very important to us, and thinking about her, we wanted to do something special, something that would have impact and would last. And, you know, my brothers and I, when we lost our mother, we've never lost anybody so close to us. It was, I think, the very first time we've lost somebody, and we weren't prepared for it. Nobody's prepared for it when you first lose somebody, and fortunately, we have a loving, strong family, and they were our foundation and helped us. But there's others that aren't as fortunate and don't have the support, you know, of a family. And we wanted to do something special that would help those people, children, and anybody who deals with loss and grief, which we all do. So that was our main focus.
So really turning grief into positive action.
Mm.
So TJ, I know that you've really been wanting to do this radio show podcast, which is really why we're here. So thank you. So can you tell us a little bit more?
You know, I had just turned 16 when my mother passed, and I was actually a big reader at that time. And for me, I was so disappointed that there wasn't much out there to help me, you know, besides, you know, a licensed therapist or counseling. There wasn't something for me to just go out and listen to or go out and read. And I just felt that doing a radio show, podcast, something of that nature, where anyone could simply download something to let them know they're not alone, would be huge. And, you know, you don't have to. And plus, this way, we're not just reaching people. You know, we're in Los Angeles. We're not just reaching people in L.A. We could be literally reaching people around the world. And that's what we want to do, is bring this topic to the forefront, and let people know there is, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, and you're not alone, and to try to somehow give people hope and inspiration to still be the best they can. And it's not just focused on those who have lost people. It's everyone. It's people, you know, who are close to people, whether it's your friend or your cousin. Everyone has a role to help those that have lost someone. And I think, you know, it's important to say that.
So, and you made a good point. We aren't licensed therapists, and we're just normal people talking about our average experiences. And if anybody is going through something where they feel like they need a therapist, then we definitely, you know, support you in reaching out to a therapist.
Exactly.
So today really is our show number one. And I think maybe it's best that we start with our story. So let's start with Taj, Terrell, and TJ. Let's start with your story. So this month, on August 27th, marks 22 years since the death of your mom, Dee Dee Jackson. Can you share what happened to her?
Which, Taj? Terrell?
TJ?
I remember driving home from a friend's house. He was actually off to college, and it was his going away party. And it's strange. I got a strange feeling, and I just, on the freeway, I started saying to myself, "I'm coming home. I'll be home, Mom. I'll be home." And got home and went to bed. And in the middle of the night, I got a phone call from someone, and they said that your mother had been in the accident. There's been a terrible accident, and you need to go to the hospital right away. And it was at 3 a.m. So I went down the hall, I knocked on my brother's doors, told him that, you know, something happened to Mom. I'm not sure what happened. And we were on our way to the hospital. And when we got there, you know, we saw the doctor, and I remember asking him, where's Mom? Where's our mom? And the doctor said, your mom's dead. And I personally don't remember anything else he said after that, because that's all I heard, and I went into a whole different thing, and I don't remember much of what he said after that. How was it for
you? I'm actually happy you shared that, because this is my first time hearing about your experience of feeling something off before it happening, you know? And I, too, had that same experience where I felt something was not right before she passed. And I couldn't, you know, I was 16, I couldn't articulate or pinpoint what it was, but I knew something bad was about to happen. And I always felt that was just my experience, but hearing that from Terrell was pretty interesting to hear. It was tough, obviously. You know, we were just three boys, and our mom was our world. So it was really tough. Literally, the rug beneath our feet was just quickly swept from our feet. And it's tough, but you know, through time and through family and love, you learn to move on, and you learn to do what's make her proud.
What about you, Taj? How was it for you?
It was weird, because I received a phone call from my mom that night, basically saying that she was staying over, and
staying over a friend. Okay,
yeah, and basically, I was half asleep, and I was rushing her off, and I kind of regret that I actually, if I could take it back, I would have stayed on the phone. But You know, you never think that that's the last time you're going to talk to your mom. So that was really difficult for me. And then also I remember waking up kind of like a struggle. So for me, when Terrell said, you know, that we have to go to the hospital, I already assumed the worst. I had kind of lived it. I didn't know what it was, but I woke up with a struggle. So for me, it was different. The drive over, because I was the one driving, I kind of already knew. So when the doctor had said, you know, your mom's dead, it hit me, but it was my worst nightmare, and it came true.
Hmm. Did you say I love you to your mom?
I always said I love you to my mom, and that's the thing. It wasn't a regret, because my mom knew that I loved her, and you know, and that I knew that she loved me. So it wasn't that. It was just, you know, you get time taken away from you in that way.
TJ and Terrell, do you remember your last conversations with your mom?
I don't. I don't have the best memory. So I don't.
I do. I do remember. I would practice piano. I had like a list of songs that I would practice all the time, and I was upstairs in the living room playing the piano, and it was earlier in the day, and my mom was off to work and help a friend, David Guess.
He was doing a show?
David Guess, yes. And real quickly, I remember my mom was wearing black shorts, a black tank top, and a black hat and glasses. And she said bye, and I was in the middle, so I just looked over and waved bye, and she took off. And then about 15, 20 minutes later, I was hungry, and I went in the kitchen, and there was a bagel left, and I called her to ask her if I could have the bagel, and she said, sure, honey, I left it for you. I said, okay, thank you. And we were about to hang up, but at the last second, I said, I love you, Mom. And she says, oh, baby, I love you, too. And that was the last time I spoke to my mom.
When the doctor told you your mom had died, what did he say? What was the cause?
I don't think he said the cause. He just said, your mom's dead.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah.
So what was it like then the following days? Did it feel like you were in a fog, like it was a dream, and you were going to wake up from it?
It felt like in a daze. Nothing mattered. I remember feeling nothing mattered. I had a lot of questions. I didn't understand why.
What were some of your questions?
Just why. Why now? Why her? Why so quickly?
Did you feel like you were robbed at an early age?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, I did. I just felt hopeless. I felt like I didn't care. You know, I was a straight A student, and I was a, you know, really respectful and polite kid, and I just went through. I remember going through a phase where I didn't care. You know, and I was a quote unquote good child. I was a good, you know, an easy child. But
did your grades slip?
They slipped, not to an F, but to C's, and I didn't care.
Did you stop going to class?
I didn't stop going to class. I had friends, they were keeping me moving, but I didn't care as much. And then it took time for me to re-care, you know. It took time for me to say, you know what, I got to do it for Mom, you know. And that's why when kids lose a parent or a loved one, it's so important to just be there for them and let them, you know. I think a lot of parents or a lot of people make the mistake of still being hard on them. You know, they just lost, in our case, our world. If someone was in our life just demanding things and being wrong to us and saying, no, you're going to get straight A's, like it wouldn't have worked. It could have been really bad for us. But our support system was really strong and there for us, and that was huge.
So how did you deal with your grief? Like, was it through your support system? Like, what really helped you?
Family. The day my mother passed, I remember coming back to the house. My Uncle Jermaine, I said it to him many times. I said it to everyone. He gave me the most important hug I ever received. And I remember, I think that was the first time I actually cried. Because when I heard my mother had passed from the doctor at the hospital, I was just stunned. I don't really remember crying. I may have, but I probably try to tough it out and go back home. And then when he gave me a really strong hug.
When your Uncle Jermaine gave you a hug?
Oh, man. It just, I was able to start. So.
Tara, what about you? What's helped you through your grief?
Well, I remember immediately after the hospital, my brothers and I, we went to the Havenhurst house, our grandmother's house. It's kind of like the family hub. And we were there for a while, but I remember the first night, we were up all night, and eventually I fell asleep on the couch, and I remember waking up hoping it was all just a bad dream. And I kept praying that it would be a dream. And, you know, one by one, the family would trickle in, and there was a lot of tears and a lot of hugs. And, you know, it's something you just, I mean, we've never experienced anything like that. And our whole world changed. But what helped me is honestly my brothers, our family, my mother, believe it or not, you know, she helped in a strange way, because she always taught us to stick together and to be there for each other. And you know, what more time is needed, you know, at that moment, you know, to rely on your brothers. Our father was there for us, but at the same time, he was very weak as well. So it's difficult, you know. There's it comes at it's just hard. It was very, very hard. And I remember, you know, for several weeks, I would be in the car driving somewhere, and I'd be looking for my mom. I really would. I wouldn't believe it. I wouldn't accept it. And I just kept thinking, maybe she's out there, and it was a mistake. And I would be looking out there, looking at people's faces, praying that I would find my mother.
Did you think or try at certain points to try and call her, or?
I didn't. You know, I didn't think that I could reach out and call her. I did have a few messages that were left on my voicemail machine that I would often play. But I remember, you know, just, again, you'd hear your mom one minute leaving you a message saying she loves you, and then the very next message was my Auntie Janet calling me. You know, I can hear it in her voice that she had heard the news, and she told me to call her when I get a chance and get the message. But that's how it just, that instant, it just changed from, you know, friends calling, leaving voicemails, call me back, my mom leaving messages, and then all of a sudden, you just, one by one, your friends and family saying, you know, we're sorry, you know, condolences, and that's tough.
What about you, Taj?
It was interesting, because for me, you know, I being the older brother, I felt a responsibility to basically, I remember my mom always telling me, and she would always write it in letters, that I was the man of the house and take care of your brothers. So for me, I kind of went into that mode and pushed, I don't want to say my feelings aside, but my grief aside. And so for me, it was kind of just making sure everyone else was okay at that point. And it was definitely, for probably years, was hoping that it was a dream, that I'd wake up and, you know, it was a nightmare. And I still have that sometimes, but it's, you know, as you get older, you realize that it's not. But for me, it was, I don't think I've ever still got over it, so.
And can I add something?
Sure.
We're all in our late 30s, early 40s, and this is 20 years ago. 22 years ago, when we lost Therma. So I'm sure people, I see the pain it still has, you know, you never get over it. There's never a perfect day, in a sense. You just have to keep going. And I think that's important for people. And for me as a parent, I it saddens me, and Terrell can probably relate, is that our kid lost out on the best grandmother. You know, and then there's a whole nother phase of having to deal with it that you go through as a parent. I know that's not this show, but I just thought that was an important thing, that that's the kind of things that we want to do on this radio podcast show, is discuss all the elements of it, because I think a lot of times people go downhill when they think they're alone.
Definitely.
I just want to say, what also helped me out was just, I knew, you know, that my mom, I always, you know, it was about making her proud. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the thing, because when you said downhill, in my head kept ringing, you know, of things, her morals and her values, and I wanted to keep that going. And so for me, it was about making her proud. That was the new mission in my life.
And to add to that, for those of you who haven't experienced that but know people who have, remind those that are suffering of that. And that's the role my Uncle Michael played. I can hear him saying, you got to make her proud, Applehead. You got to make her proud. Do it for her. Do it for her. And that hearing it from him was important.
And at the time, you guys were 16, 19, and 21, and you were halfway through the debut album that your mom was actually really working with you on.
Yep.
And can you tell me that story about what happened and if you felt like you really wanted to complete it, or what got you motivated to finish it?
Well, it's always been our goal and our dream to do music ever since we were little. And our mother really helped us. Our father helped us as well, but he was often on the road traveling, touring. But our mom made sure we rehearsed and we practiced every day. So doing this album was very important to us because it was going to come out, and it was going to be through a major record label, and you know, we were finally reaching our goals. And then, you know, midway through, unfortunately, we lost our mother, and everything in our world shattered and stopped. And I don't think music wasn't on our minds. I don't, you know, the project or anything. I don't think that happened until our uncle came and helped us get back on our feet. And like TJ said, you know, he told us the best way to honor her is to make her proud and to continue, you know, going for your goals and doing, you know, what would make her happy. And that's to complete this project and be successful and, you know, make your mark. So it was in New York. You know, we were in New York because he was recording. But at that point, that's when we started to feel like it's time to complete this for her, you know, as well.
Did you go through a couple weeks where you didn't want to do anything, though? Did you feel depressed,
oh, yeah,
sad? Did you have waves
for sure.
of just...
Oh, yeah.
What was it like?
Well,
you want to quit everything?
Well, it's like TJ says, you just don't really care. You just feel lonely. You feel like someone can push you and you just can fall, and you don't care if you stop, you know, because you don't really understand it, you know, losing somebody until you go through it. So even something simple like going to the movie theater, you know, and watching a movie, and if someone passes away in the movie, it triggers you to think about your mom. Or, you know, going to lunch and you see a child and the mother. You know, there's so many different things that trigger. And it
would it be hard
you.
If you were driving down streets that were, you know, you walked with your mom or...
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Sure.
My brothers and I, we didn't stay at our house for a long while, you know, because of the memories. We stayed at our grandmother's because it was so difficult, you know, so many memories. But obviously we were in the same neighborhood and there's triggers everywhere, you know. But I think that's also why our Uncle Michael wanted us to get away and go to New York and visit him and spend time with him as well.
So I want to commend you guys on sharing your story today. This is not an easy topic. Death is not an easy topic to talk about. And I feel, we all feel like this will really help, hopefully, someone out there in their own loss and grief to feel that they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And through the foundation, we've begun to really feel like all of us that we're able to start coping with our own loss and grief that we're suffering. And for those of you who are listening, we really want to know your story of loss and grief and how you've been coping, and we're building a community, so we hope that you really will join us. And if you're just tuning in and want to learn more about the foundation, you can go to www.dggf.org. So now I have something personal to say. Thanks, TJ.
Yeah.
During the period of time that I was working with all of you on the docuseries, The Jacksons Next Generation for Lifetime, we definitely embarked on quite a journey together, and the loss of your mom was so devastating and so many ways that when I met you guys 20 years later, you guys were really still stuck in your grief. And I definitely could relate, because 5 years ago, I lost my college best friend to brain cancer. And the day before he died, he called me to have the goodbye conversation, and he tried to prepare me. But it wasn't until I actually met all of you that I realized that I was also stuck in my own grief. But I didn't really know what to do about it. And I started really thinking about how in school, You know, we're taught ABCs, 1+1, but not really coping skills on how to get through grief, which is such a complicated emotion, and how to find hope and inspiration again after a loved one passes away. And the day when I was talking to Taj about docuseries storylines, and he shared with me, you know, the dream of creating a foundation in honor of his mom, it was just one of those life-changing conversations for me that just made me realize, like, together we really could do something about loss and grief and find hope and inspiration. So I'm really grateful to be here with all of you at this point now, a year later.
Thank you, Henry. And we didn't know about your loss, Henry. I think Henry's the director of our foundation as well. And I don't think I knew... I mean, because I always knew you were very passionate about the foundation, but I didn't know you were linked to the foundation until quite recently. So thanks for sharing it. I don't know, I just commend you. And it's for everyone listening. It's hard to come here and talk to the world and so open, but it's something that's necessary because death and loss is a topic that we try to bury and hide. And we're trying our best to kind of, you know, provide some type of roadmap or to do our part into helping others who are going through
it. It's hard because you feel vulnerable, like even talking about it now, like the goodbye conversation. And what I realized through all of us sharing is I started thinking about, you know, when my best friend Jeremy called me to tell me he had brain cancer and the doctor said it was 2.5 years, I just thought, okay, what can we do? You know, there's got to be something. We can beat this because I definitely have like the we can do anything kind of attitude. And 2.5 years later, he called me to tell me, you need to come home. I need to see you. And my first reaction was, I can't possibly get on a plane to fly from California to Massachusetts right now because I have the flu. I'm actually really sick. And then I just started laughing, like, I can't believe I'm saying this to a man who's dying. And I said that out loud, and like it just kept... I couldn't stop myself. And Jeremy just started laughing, saying, that's why I love you, because of your honesty. But I really need you to get on that plane because I need to see you before I die. And taking that plane, 6 hours, I just cried thinking about, wow, I'm about to go say goodbye to somebody that I talk to nearly every day.
Yeah.
And I still remember that moment of like, seeing him for the last time and just turning and just seeing his face, and it was like he was memorizing me and my other college friends of like that last moment. And then 3 weeks later he called me to say goodbye, and you know, for a couple hours it was all about what he wanted for me in my life and you know how much I added to his life. And I just was like, I'm just not prepared for this conversation. I didn't know what to do. And it's still really hard. And I think for me, the hardest part is just the waves of emotion and just missing him.
Yeah.
So I am glad that we're really doing this. And I don't know, I've thought about it a lot. I don't know what's worse is like knowing someone is about to die and having a goodbye, having the opportunity to have a goodbye conversation, or just the shock that they're gone. Like in all of you, like losing your mom, it was like a shock, like she was just gone. And we haven't even talked about like your mom was murdered. Like murder, it's such a violent word. And how like losing a loved one really is difficult, but having a loved one murdered is just so incredibly jarring and violent. So how did you guys come to terms with this? And even when you guys share, you don't usually say murder, you just say your mom died. Like how have you kind of moved through it, and how do you talk about it?
For me, support system was huge. There was a book I read, what's it called, Gerald? Embraced by the Light? That book helped me a lot. It took me a while to find it, and I don't know how I found it, but eventually that book helped me in terms of seeing. I think in the American culture, a lot of deaths we see on TV and hear about on the news or read about are always violent, you know? And that book kind of put I hate to say it this way, but a light spin on it and made it seem more graceful for my mom, you know? And that probably helped. Whether I know it was what the feeling of death is like, I don't know. But at least it gave me that other viewpoint. So that saved me quite a bit, because obviously I just want my mom happy and in a better place. So that was the first time I kind of thought that way, was with that book. How about you guys?
When did you find out that your mom was murdered?
That night. It was probably 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm.
Terrell, do you remember the story of when you found out?
No, it was that night, you know. It's hard because everybody deals with it differently, but I don't like thinking about that as much because it's horrible. The cuts and the bruises, and you know, I don't like discussing and talking about. Maybe they can, but it's just like TJ was saying. I think everybody deals with it differently. For him, he read the book and it helped him. I was different. I think I maybe started the book, but I just didn't want to deal with it, and I pretty much put all my emotions through music. Because I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to face it. And even now, I'm still, you know, dealing with it. You know, loss. Because I'm not sure if I'll ever be able to get over it. I don't think you can get over something like that. It's more you learn how to live with it. You know, but you're never over it. You're never okay. It always hurts. It always stings. You know, every Mother's Day hurts. You know, coming up August 27th. Her birthday, it's like you remember all these things and it always hurts. It's always sad. You know, you just have to learn how to keep moving on. Mm.
And we, every 3 years or so, we have to go to parole mm-hmm. hearing and see the murder of our mother face to face, pretty much, and relive it from
his
vantage
point. I think we need to share the story about what happened. So your mom was dating somebody?
He was dating a man who, again, from my gut instinct, I didn't like, and I wasn't that kind of person. But it wasn't her first boyfriend after my father and her divorced. But something about this guy just I didn't like. I couldn't get close to. But again, I didn't know how to articulate it, or I didn't feel I was right to tell my mom who she could and couldn't date.
Well, you were 16 years old at the time.
Exactly. So I was just, you know, looking back, there's a little bit of, not guilt, because I don't think I could have stopped that relationship, but it's just interesting how life can kind of tell you things. And I think it's important for, if you have a gut feeling, to kind of speak up, you know, and not demand things, but at least make your voice heard.
Share. So your mom was dating this man?
She was dating this man. And
for a couple months?
I don't know. I'd say about 3-4 months. And I remember going to a Dodger game and not liking him. But I guess she went to his house and he had physically beat her to her passing. And my mother didn't know how to swim, so he put her in the pool to disguise that she was trying to learn how to swim and failed, and that's how she passed. But there was no water in her system and things like that, and there was a lot of bruise marks. So they knew it wasn't from the swimming, it was from something else.
So he wanted your mom to ask for money,
yeah.
Right, from you? Or
he was in a businessman and in a financial situation where he needed money, and my mother was very strong-willed. And he needed my mother to ask someone in the family for money. And my mom wouldn't do it.
And so then he got really angry.
That's what everyone's feeling because of what she had said to others and things like that.
So then not only did your mom pass away, but then you had to go through the process of, you know, court.
Yeah, that was a couple years later. I mean, mm-hmm. we were on our career at that point and you know, touring throughout Europe. And then we got a call that the court decided to pick up our case.
The prosecutor called you?
I don't know exactly. I was 19.
Do you remember that, Taj?
Yeah, I do, actually. It was right after our Brotherhood tour. And it was literally, I think, 2 years later, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous.
I think it was longer, Taj.
Yeah, it was. Because it was around 97.
97, yeah, 3 years later. It was... I don't want to get into the politics of it, but there was really no reason why our case wasn't presented earlier, but because of the situations with our family and LA, they kind of hid my mom's case. And it happened to be an up-and-coming DA that saw the case, you know, filed away and decided to take it on, or else we probably would have never got justice. So it's just... It was hard. It's still is hard because it's at the same time you're getting punished for certain things that aren't out of your control as well.
And then every 3 years you have to go back to a hearing?
Well, lately he's been up for parole pretty much every 3 years.
Because of his age.
Yeah. So we've gone, I think, a total of 3 times now.
What is that experience like? Is it like you have to relive it all over again?
It's not a fun day. Usually it's, you know, one time it was all the way in Blythe. So it's a long ride out there with nothing to think about but what's about to come. And then lately it's been in San Luis Obispo, which is further away too. And the whole day you're just, for me, I'm thinking I'm about to be in a room with someone that murdered my mother. And from past experiences, I know what I'm about to get into. I'm going to have to relive everything, hear the story, and you're doing all this with the man literally like within 20 feet from you, you know? So it's a long day. It's you relive it, you know, mm-hmm. and fortunately, you know, he's still there. And, you know, but again, in a couple of years, we're going to have to go through it again.
So, TJ, what do you miss most about your mom?
Everything. It's an easy one. Everything. Everything.
Taj?
TJ took my answer.
Yes.
I mean, everything. You're never prepared for that. You're never prepared that, you know, if someone could have said the worst thing that could happen to you, the worst thing that could happen to me has already happened to me. So everything else is desensitized.
That's a good point, because I felt the same way. You're kind of desensitized. That's a great word, adjective to describe how you feel. Nothing can... I remember, like, I never wanted to fight. I was never that kind of person. I was, you know, scared of things. I wouldn't go outside and, you know... But when you lose your mom, you'll do anything. You know, you have that loss of fear. And I remember feeling that.
Hmm. And Tara, what about you? How, in what ways does your mom live on?
There's a lot. I mean, she's taught us so much. And like TJ touched on earlier, we have children, so that's difficult, you know, because I know she'd be so happy to be with them, and I know they were robbed of a wonderful grandmother, and I could have learned so much, you know, just from, because she was a great mother, you know, teaching me how to be a great parent. But I do the best I can, you know. I've had a lot of great role models, but it's difficult because, you know, you just want to hear their voice one more time, or you want to have that conversation. You know, we didn't get that opportunity. But we do the best we can, and some days are easier than others, but it's never the same.
I think you said during the show you realized that, like, when one of your brothers hugs you or they put their hand on your shoulder, it's also kind of your mom supporting you as well.
Mm-hmm. It's everything she taught us, you know, all the love, you know. I do feel her presence. You know, we all grew up playing baseball, and I coach my kids now, and one went through T-ball and the other one just started, but it was my mom that started the T-ball program there, you know, and we play on a field that's named after her. So it makes me smile, but it makes me sad because instead of her being there watching my son play, she's not, but, you know, he's on a field named after her, and I'm watching all these children play on the field because of a program she started there in Encino.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Real quick? For anyone who has questions themselves about our story...
There is a question.
Oh, we have a question?
Oh, let's go to the question, yeah.
All right, do you want to read it, Taj?
Sure.
But first, real quick, before I get into the question, if you have a question, reach us at Twitter... at DDJ Foundation.
Yes.
At DDJ Foundation, and ask us anything you want about our story. Now, Taj is going to read a question from someone.
Yeah. It says, have the three of you gone through the process of forgiving the person who took your mother's life? Not for him, but for you.
Have we forgave him?
Yeah, have we gone through that process of forgiveness?
I think
it's difficult. I'll answer.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, you
can think more.
Go ahead. I think we're all very forgiving people and understanding people, and asking someone that has murdered your mother is very hard to do, to forgive them. But we've all, you know, we've talked about having that long drive, and we've all thought about, you know, this may be the time he gets out, and how are we going to be with it, and could you forgive him? The thing that makes it difficult for us is there's no remorse, really. He still speaks like it was an accident. He pretty much doesn't admit to it. So he's still, in our minds, dangerous, and doesn't, there's no forgiveness on his part. So it makes it hard for us to forgive him for his actions when, you know.
And he tries to put the blame on her.
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How? So
by saying that that she was trying to swim, it's
he victimizes himself.
Yeah,
as if he was just
wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, wrong. Like he's just there at the wrong spot, and they needed to accuse someone, so it was him. But I don't know the amount of bruises and all the evidence, but it was
over 50.
Ridiculous amount of evidence.
So is that also why you, every 3 years, you make sure that you're available for the court date to go, so that way he's...
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so interesting. It's so... Because there's times where I try to tell myself, I need to be okay if he gets out. I need to be okay, basically with the decision. You know, and I do play in my mind, what if I see him at a gas station or at a restaurant if he were out? But I try to tell myself I need to be okay. So when I go into the parole hearings, I kind of don't really, I try to eliminate my personal feelings to the decision making or my input about the decision making. And the reason why I'm happy he's still, the main reason why I'm happy he's still in jail isn't for me. It's more so that he doesn't put another family through that. That's the reason. You know, I'm kind of...
Safety of the community.
It's safety of the community. And I don't want another family to go through what I have to at his, because of him. You know, so it's really not me at this point. It's the community.
And so while we were filming, I actually saw how much pain you guys were really in still from the loss of your mom. And knowing that music was always a creative and emotional outlet for all of you, we decided one of the storylines would be to follow you in writing an original song that portrayed not just your feelings of grief and loss, but also the uplifting power of love and how you can carry that through even the darkest of times. So in honor of your mom, you wrote a song with your dad, Tito, and TJ's son, Royal, and you called it Power of Love. What inspired you to write a song for your mom, and was it healing for you as well for your dad? Taj?
Which part do you want to answer?
The first part.
I mean, every song we write is for our mom in that sense, but I think it was something that, because once we knew that we had this foundation, it, you know, there's, music is so healing to a lot of people, and music is so powerful, and we wanted to put, you know, that hope and that inspiration into words and into a song. So for us, it was definitely it was a no-brainer to write a song about, you know, the foundation and something that she would love.
So I guess we should play a bit of the song. And so people know, obviously we have this foundation, and there's a lot of ways to support the foundation. One easy way that you can make a difference and help us continue and grow this foundation is simply by downloading our song Power of Love, where the proceeds go straight to the foundation. So here is...
And you can purchase it on iTunes and Amazon?
iTunes, Amazon, and whatever other purchasing kids do these days. But here is Power of Love.
I know we have to make a change somehow, 'cause tomorrow it's not too far away from now. Mm-hmm.
impossible. Oh, with love by your side, with love by your side. Don't give up. The hope you lost can still be found. 'Cause miracles, they always seem to come around. Come around. Nothing's impossible. Strength when you are weak. I'll lift you when you're feeling down. I'll help when you're in need. And you will see, you'll never have to feel alone. Together we can conquer all, as long as we believe. Have to find a way somehow. Mm-hmm. We can't turn away,
turn away.
'Cause our chance to change is here and now.
I had the opportunity to have known your mom, Dee Dee, and I'm really proud to be part of an organization that represents someone who did so much for her family, friends, and the community. She really was a doting and dedicated mother to three boys, a sister, a wife, a humanitarian who mothered and protected all those around her with every fiber of her being. And her mission in life really was simple: to protect, love, and guide as many people as possible, near and far, family, friend, or stranger. And her life was dedicated to improving lives, making positive change, and spreading love. To her, nothing really was impossible, dedicating her time and resources to raising money for schools, communities, and foundations focused on children. And I have to say, as a woman, it's really an honor to continue her legacy and a privilege that I can share another woman's accomplishments and let the world know all that she did. So thank you, Taj, Terrell, and TJ, for sharing your story of grief and loss and how you found hope and inspiration through the power of love.
Thank you. Thank you, Henry. And for everyone listening, reminder that we're just four people who've lost a loved one, and we just appreciate your support. We'll be here next Wednesday at 1 o'clock. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
See you there.